Welcome to Princeton's World, where the bad is made good and the good made better. Join him for a new revelatory experience designed for those who want more because they realize there is more to be had. Welcome to Princeton's World.
Good morning, everyone. This is Princeton Holt, and my heart leaps for joy today. The goodness of God allowed me to come across a friend of mine who I had not been in touch with for many, 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 many years, and the personage of Billy Simons. Billy, hi there. How are you doing today, my friend?
I am doing great. How about yourself?
I am doing better than good, Billy. Better than good. It's been a long, long time.
Yes, it has.
A long time since we have touched base with each other. I had the privilege of making recontact with you from your brother, Douglas, gave me a phone number, and I wanted to bring you on my show to allow the audience to be blessed by what God has done in your life. So, Billy, you're now living in Mount Dora, Florida. Am I right?
That's correct.
Not far from Orlando.
About 11 miles north.
Okay. What brought you there? What was it about the transition that brought you to that place?
At the time, I was working for the state of Tennessee, and I got an offer to come down to Florida Hospital. They were just opening a college, Florida Hospital College of Health Sciences. And they asked me to come down and handle the finances for that institution.
Wow. Wow. Now, you majored in business administration.
That is correct.
With a minor in mathematics.
That's it.
How in the world did you get into the area of finance?
Well, part one of my other minors also was accounting. And I didn't think that I would use it at all. And it just so happens that that's what I started doing.
Wow. And how did you become proficient enough to be able to work in an institution like that? I mean, you know, one doesn't just jump into that kind of a technical complication. How did you grow into that? Go ahead.
I think what helped me was before I came to Florida, I worked for the state of Tennessee Department of Tourism.
Okay.
And I handled their finances.
Okay.
And numbers has always been easy for me.
Oh, man.
And so that was just right down my alley.
Wow.
And God blessed it. And it went from there.
Fantastic. I want to get into the state of tourism and how that came about and all. But you, of course, you said you majored in math. I mean, minored in math, and it makes sense now. You're saying that numbers has always been easy for you.
That's correct.
Billy, thank you for opening. Just this little bit of conversation has titillated my inner spirit, man.
Okay,
so you were born in, you said you were born in Denver?
No, I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Cincinnati, that's right. Cincinnati, Ohio. Okay, now you are, how many siblings do you have?
I have two siblings. Both of them are older than I am. I'm the youngest.
Okay. Did you find yourself to be spoiled coming up, being the youngest child?
Quite the contrary.
Cut it out.
Quite the contrary.
That's usually not the case.
Yeah. But I was definitely not spoiled.
Okay. Tell me, what was it like growing up a Simons? Your daddy was a pastor. And I think many other members in your family were connected to ministry in some way. Am I right?
That is correct. Of my father's five brothers, three were pastors.
Okay. So what was it like growing up, number one, in the Simons home and growing up among ministers like that?
Well, I mean, to be honest, growing up as a minister's child was not easy. But growing up as a Simons was interesting. I mean, our cousins, especially all my age, we were very close at the time.
Mm-hmm.
my grandparents lived in Milton Junction, Wisconsin. So we would all be up there during the summers and spend summers together. Okay. So it was good.
Okay.
The older we got, because we live all over the United States, you know, we try and stay in touch, but that's not always the case.
Okay. Now you mentioned that that growing up a minister's son was not always easy. Talk to me about that.
Well, church members have the attitude that ministers' children should be perfect.
Okay.
And when you're not perfect, then, you know, they kind of lean on you a little bit. Okay. And being young and not understanding what that's all about was not the easiest thing to do.
Wow. You know what, Billy, I in my interviews try to get people to be as transparent as possible, because it's in the middle of the pain, the struggles that we have, there are so many lessons to be learned, you know, because you're not the only one who grew up in a minister's home, who found it not very easy to be. So when you mentioned that, of course, if people are expecting you to be far better behaved than the majority of people in the church or young people in the church. But what were you rebellious? Did you react against the strict regulations that were enforced upon you?
Well, not really. It was probably more how I looked. I look different than my brother, my two siblings.
Okay.
I have blonde hair.
Okay.
And light eyes, and at the time, very light.
Okay.
So it was. It was a hard road to run down.
Okay.
It was like, okay, you know, who are you and why are you here?
Yeah. You know, in interviewing your brother, Douglas, I had to go there, which with what you're saying right now, I just had to go there, man. being really, really light in the Adventist church, or even in the world that we lived in back in the day.
Yes, sir.
I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and the old saying was, if you are white, you are right. If you are brown, stick around. If you are black, stay back.
That's it.
And when we went to Oakwood, I mean, you know, the light-skinned guys, you know, Michael Bernards and Aldwyn Humphreys and Pearsons and all of those guys stood out. And I can only speak from my perspective. I had my insecurities when I went to Oakwood College. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I had mine too. And I was there in the academy, so I had a lot of insecurities.
Tell me, man, with your complexion, did you feel privileged being as light-skinned as you are?
No, quite the contrary. Wow. I felt out of place.
Oh, my God.
I was called different kind of names. You know, I was not accepted because I was looked at as, you think you're better than we are.
Wow.
Because you are light-skinned, you have light eyes, and you have good hair.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of threw me back.
Wow.
But, you know, it was something I had to go through. Yeah. And had some help while I was at Oakwood with a friend who set me down one day and said, hey, you have nothing to do with how you look. But you have everything to do with how you handle yourself going forward in life.
You know, that's so amazing, man, because again, I'm smiling, you know, and giggling on the inside, because you would never expect that kind of harassment or attitudes to be extended towards the light skin back in those days. I even in ministry, it appeared to me that many of the lighter skinned ministers really excelled. But I don't want to get into that, because I mean, you know, you explained yourself quite vividly, and I think the same experience that you had was the same experience that your brother had, because he came to the same conclusions that you came through.
Yeah.
Or came to. But let me ask you this. In terms of your neighborhood that you grew up in, did you have any civil rivalries in your family, in your home?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, just ordinary thing. I think because my brother was older and my sister was older and I'm the youngest, you know, it was always, you know, they would side with each other and say, Billy did it, something like that. And, but I think once my brother went away to academy, when he came back, the relationship and my sister, it changed. Mm. It was like, whoa, you know, and we became much closer.
Okay.
Because of that separation. And it's been that way ever since.
Now, do you think the change was on their part? Or what do you think happened in terms of making that change?
I think probably more on my part because I missed them so much. Even though we might have argued or fussed like most kids do, the fact that they were gone.
Wow.
For such a length of time. And when they came back, it was good to see them. And we sat down and we talked and we did this, that, and the other. So I think it was a change in me.
That's so beautiful. I love it, man. Relationships, man, so powerful. And we have a tendency to go through these kinds of relationships. They could either make you good or make it good or better for you or bad for you. But thank God it brought you around. Now, in your neighborhood and your community that you were living in, were you enticed by the negative elements that go on in a lot of communities, or was the community that you grew up in relatively upper class, middle class?
That's hard to say, mainly because of the way we moved. My father was in the military when I was born. When he got out of the military, we moved to Huntsville. Mm. He was at Oakwood College there, got his degree. When he finished Oakwood, we moved to New York where he got his master's. He was there a year.
Wow.
And we left there and moved to Milton Junction, Wisconsin, where his father lived. And we were there maybe 4 or 5 months. That's when I started school.
Okay.
And we were the only three in the school.
Okay.
And there were no other black folks in the school.
Well, okay.
And so then we stayed there for 6 months, and then we moved to Atlanta.
Okay.
And it was an experiment. Atlanta was fine. We were in a good neighborhood. We had a lot of friends in the neighborhood. But it was also during the time when a lot of the racial tension really got there.
Okay.
Got going. So,
yeah.
You know, it was interesting.
Yeah.
They didn't know, a lot of folks didn't know how to take us. I mean, the kids that we knew in the neighborhood knew what we were and knew who we were, but the rest of them around didn't know. So it was interesting to watch all that.
Yeah, when you were in that school that was predominantly white and you guys were the only three, what was that like? Were you old enough to define what was going on around you?
No.
Okay. Okay.
I was in the first grade.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I had no idea. My thing was either these are kids, you know, let's be friends.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good. All right. So you went to Oakwood College. You said you went to the academy first, Oakwood Academy.
Yes.
Did you go the entire 4 years?
No, only 2 years, my junior and senior year.
Now, were you there when Morris Patterson was in the academy?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let me see. There was some other individuals that I know. I can't call them right
Frank
now.
Frank Patterson is his brother. I mean, the McGinnises.
Okay.
What is his name? Oh, Lord. Sam Anderson was there.
Okay.
You know, a lot of the kids that lived in Huntsville were there.
Okay. You know, I set my clock to go off for our interview. And I got to cut this thing off. Now, okay, so you went to Oakwood College.
Yes.
What year did you go to Oakwood?
I was there in 65, 66 through 70.
That was the academy?
No, that was college.
65?
I graduated from the academy in 65.
Oh, my God. So you were at Oakwood the same time I was?
Yes, sir, I was.
Oh, my Lord. Jesus. Okay.
Yes, sir, I was.
Yeah.
I had a year out because I got drafted.
Wow. Okay, so you and Doug were in the college same time?
We were roommates.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Okay. All right. All right, very good. Now, how young are you from Doug? How many years?
I am 2 years younger than Doug. Okay. He is 79, I'm 77.
Wow. I just didn't classify you as being up there like that, Billy. I tell
Being
you.
old.
Yeah. You always had that young look about yourself, man. I mean, always had that young look about yourself. Okay, so what was your experience like at Oakwood?
Oh, Lord. It has its challenges. I had, when Doug graduated, I had two roommates, Allen and Murphy. Allen Johnston and Cleveland Thaddeus Wilson.
Now, Cleveland was my roommate too.
Yep. I think we started, he was probably your roommate first.
He was, yeah. I think I was the
Yeah.
first roommate he had.
Yep. And I mean, it was the three of us were real tight.
Okay.
But there were challenges on campus for me.
Okay.
And I just tried to do what I wanted to do. I guess my goal has always been because people, I experienced being put down a lot.
Okay.
And
Okay.
I was determined that I would never treat anybody like that. So I
Okay.
would always encourage people.
Wow. And Billy, a lot of times these things we go through, because I had, some great times at Oakwood, but of course there were those bumpy times as well. And I don't think anybody can escape that. Everybody's young and foolish and immature and all of those other kinds of things. And
Yes,
all,
I know.
all of that comes to play out when you're in that kind of environment. So there have been good times and bad times for me as well. But when you look back, what can you say you learned from it?
I learned to accept people where they were,
Okay, wow.
whether I agreed with them or not.
Yeah.
Acknowledging the fact that you're entitled to how you see things, but so am I. But I need to hear how you see things because it helps me to deal with you going forward.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. That's amazing. Wow. It helps us to accept people where they are.
Most definitely.
Yeah. And not where we want them to be.
So true. So very
Yeah.
true.
Okay, man. So you left Oakwood College. You said you left in
1970.
1970. I graduated in 1969. Yeah. And from Oakwood, where did you go?
From Oakwood, I went to California.
Okay. Tell me about that.
It was good. I had gone out there the summer before and worked for my brother-in-law for Bill at LA Union.
Okay.
And because I worked very well with my hands, I got that from my father.
Okay.
I bought my first car that summer, the summer before my senior year in college. I bought my first car.
Okay.
And again, what I learned from my father that I put into practice, and I rebuilt the whole car from the
Wow.
front to back. And those skills helped because when I graduated and moved to California, they had three buses at the school.
Yeah.
And I rebuilt two engines
Come
and
on.
replaced three clutches
Come on, man.
and a few other things. So, along with the fact that I did physical education because I was the youngest teacher there, it was good. I enjoyed it. I
That's
really did.
good. That's good, Billy. Physical education, just being exposed to things you haven't been exposed to before in the way you were exposed. I just like the element of adventure, going into new transitions in life. So you left there and then you became worked with a tourist.
Now, actually, I left there and started working for as an auditor for the state of Tennessee.
Okay. And how did you fumble, I mean, get into that?
Well, what was interesting, one of my classmates, and I can't remember his name for the life of me, he was an auditor for the state of Tennessee when I got there and ran into him at church. He said, "Man, what are you doing here?" And I told him, he said, "So what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm looking for a job." And he said, "They're hiring at state auditor." So I went up there and applied and got hired.
Wow. Okay.
And when I mean, I audited, I drove all over the state. I was single at the time. And I spent 3 weeks on the road and 1 week in my apartment.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So it was good. And then they opened up the Department of Tourism and I got hired over there. So spent the next 4 years with them.
And what did that entail?
All budget.
Okay,
information, so handling the finances. I presented the budget before the Finance Ways and Means Committee of the state, okay, which is probably the most powerful committee in the state.
Wow.
And made sure that we didn't overspend.
Uh-huh.
And we were blessed. I mean, that was truly a blessing.
Wow, that's amazing. In what way? What way would you say?
Well, it allowed me to put the skills that God had given me, uh-huh, for work.
Wow.
And given what I had gone through, you know, it helped me to work with the folks there.
Yeah.
I mean, my commissioner called me in his office one day and said, you do know that including the deputy commissioner who was black, nobody in here knows you're black.
Whoa. Wow.
And I looked at him. I said, are you serious? He said, yes.
Wow.
So I learned a lot from him and kept the department going.
Great. Now, what did the Department of Tourism entail? What did they do? I mean, I have an idea, but I just want you to explain.
Well, they turned the state around from the standpoint, instead of being a pass-through state with visitors going to Florida.
Yeah.
They got it to where we were just pass-through to where people were staying for 3 and 4 days.
Okay. In terms of recreation and vacations and what have
you? Yes.
Okay.
Promoting the state's all of the parks and all of the other things that they offer.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine, you know, being at Oakwood College and going through Oakwood and graduating from Oakwood, landing there in that position?
No, I can't.
Yeah.
Furthest thing from my mind.
I know. What a God we serve, man.
Yeah. Oh, he's something else.
Yeah.
Jeremiah 29:11.
I'm telling you, man. He knows the plans, doesn't he?
Yes, sir.
He does. So, okay, from there, what happened? God came knocking on your door again. What happened after you leave? Where did you go from
there? I left there, and I got hired at Meharry Medical College.
Okay, in Nashville.
In Nashville. And I worked there for probably another 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Doing the same thing?
Doing basically the same thing.
Okay.
And then I left there and went back to the state.
Okay.
Worked at the Department of Commerce and Insurance.
And what state was that?
Tennessee. Still in Nashville.
Okay. All right. What was your experience like at Meharry, man? You know, Meharry has a very, very dynamic reputation, credible, black doctors. A lot of them black doctors came out and were members of the churches around the area. What was it like working at Meharry, man?
It was really good. It was a challenge from the standpoint of, you know, we aren't always the best when it comes to staying on top of our finances.
Yeah.
But they were conscientious about it. My boss was Fred Polness.
Okay.
And he was a good man. Okay. He really was. Uh-huh. In fact, I stay in touch with him now.
Okay. Very good.
Even all these years gone, and we're still in touch. But he was a good man. He always challenged you, always supported you. So my time at Meharry was outstanding.
That is great, Billy. Man, that is fantastic, Doc. So there you go to the state of now. You're going to the state of Alabama. I mean, I'm sorry, Tennessee. Tell me, what did you do there?
Oh, I worked for the Department of Commerce and Insurance.
Okay, wow.
Now I was assistant to the business manager there at the time.
Okay. That was another learning curve, right?
Very much so.
Okay. Tell me about it.
It was just something new. I mean, the finances is what I do, but all the other stuff I had to learn. And the commissioner was a woman and very good. Challenged everybody.
Okay.
I got to know her quite well.
Okay.
And she was wanting me to stay because when I got the call to come to Florida, I was there.
Okay.
And I went into her office and said, I've got a call to go to such and such. And she said, you're not taking that, are you?
Wow.
And I said, well, I think I'm going to.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the best move that I could have made at the time.
Yeah.
And my family has been blessed because of it ever since.
Wow. So you were married at the time?
Well, I was married at that time, yes.
Yeah, in what area, what time, what in the chronological sequence you just took me through, when did you get married?
Now you're going to get me in trouble. I've been married for 48 years.
Wow. Almost as long as I am old, Bill. But go ahead.
So it's I forget the exact date. 76, 77, 78. Okay. I don't know. Somewhere back there, I got married. And I got married at Riverside Chapel.
Okay, okay. And were you working in Meharry at the time or the state?
I was working for the state.
Okay, okay. All right, okay. Now, Pam is from Nashville, right?
She was born and raised in Nashville.
Yeah.
A light board.
Yeah, I remember. I remember very well. Okay. Now, what was the call to Florida about?
It was just a friend of mine, Nathan Ford, was working at Advent Health's corporate office.
Okay.
No, at the hospital. Uh-huh. Florida Hospital. And he said, send me your resume. So I didn't think. I just, sent it on down to him. And the next thing I know, I get a call.
Okay.
And they flew me down, and I talked with the president of the college, and Dave Greenlaw. And he was impressed. And I'm thinking, do I really want to do this? And the more I thought about it and everything, it was felt like the best thing to do at the time.
Okay. Was there a large pay decrease in that?
It was about the same.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
About the same, because they were just starting up, and they really didn't understand what it should be.
Uh-huh.
And that was part of the initial struggle.
Okay.
I flew with the CFO of the hospital, which the college answered to. We flew to Kettering.
Okay.
To see how they handle things and how they set things up.
I see.
And then we came back, and he and I had to explain to the president of the college how it needs to be set up.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, getting involved in something from startup and having the opportunity to do the building and being creative and all of that kind of thing, not coming into an already established system, how was that in terms of satisfying you? Or was it difficult?
It was difficult. It was frustrating at times, mainly because it was new to everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was a situation where we were trying to make sure we're doing the best that we could do, and everybody's looking at us, so we can't make mistakes and this type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my thing was, in finances, you learn by your mistakes.
Yeah, that's right. and sometimes the consequence is not that great, right?
No, that's true. But you do what you know and then see how it turns out. And then if you make mid-course corrections, you can do that.
Yeah.
But it was a struggle. And the fact that the relationship between the college and the hospital wanted to run it, and the college was saying no, and in reality, they couldn't run it.
Yeah, right.
So it was interesting.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was a challenge. It was a challenge.
Now, Billy, let's leap. Let's take the phantom leap now.
Okay.
Tell me, my name is Princeton Holt now. It used to be Henry Holt, but I still go by Henry. It's Princeton Henry Holt.
Okay.
But let me ask you, what happened?
Oh boy.
auditing, finances. What happened, man? I mean, what was the motivation that caused you to go into the ministry?
Well, what's interesting, it was a combination of several things. I was attending church at Mount Sinai.
In Orlando.
Okay. A friend of ours who was attending also, Ruth and Nathan Ford, their youngest son started going to Mount Dora Church, which was predominantly white.
Okay.
And here's a kid that didn't want to have anything to do with church. Uh-huh. But he was getting up every Sabbath morning, going to Sabbath school up there, and all of this. And the mother going, okay, what's going on up there that I don't know about? So she went up there with him one day. And she was so impressed by the Bible studies that they were doing with the young people and with the adults, and just the programming that was going on up there. Mm-hmm. And so she called. We were close. And so she called and she says, y'all might want to come up here and take a look at this. Mm-hmm. And we went up there and moved our membership from Mount Sinai to Mount Dora.
Okay.
And the pastor of Mount Dora was Mike Coe. Uh-huh. His father was the president of the Southern Union for a while, I think. Okay. Or Florida Hospital, or Florida Conference. I'm okay. not sure. One of the two.
Wow.
And he and I became very close.
You mean the pastor, not you and the president?
Yes.
Okay,
go ahead. No, Pastor okay. Mike and I became okay. very close. I mean, we were just like tied to the hip.
Yeah.
And I was, at the time, I was not working.
Okay.
And he came up to me after church one day, and he said, I was impressed in my prayer time. I mind we were doing, I was living at the time, my wife and I were living at the time with my oldest son.
Okay.
And so we were going up there on Wednesday nights for Bible study, on Friday night for Bible study, and Saturday afternoon for Bible study. So we were having Bible studies three times a week.
Okay.
And he came up to me and he said, in my prayer time, God impressed me to tell you that you're going to Africa on this mission trip. And I looked at him. And I said, now, Mike, you and I and God knows that I have not been working for almost a year. Uh-huh. And he said, I know. He said, you go home and pray. You and Pam go home and pray about it. And what we had experienced in that the year prior to that was, in our prayer time, Pam would pray. But I would pray. God would impress something upon my heart. He would confirm it through her.
Wow.
And so I prayed about it and prayed about it. And I asked her one day, I said, okay, what did God tell you? She said that we're going
to Africa. Oh, my God. Lord have mercy.
And I looked at her and I said, okay. So people would ask us, are you going? Oh, yep, we're going. And didn't know how it was going to happen, but everything was paid for us, including spending money there.
Yeah.
Don't know where it came from. It would come in envelopes.
Wow.
In the church for a tithe and offering. No name on it, just our name.
Wow.
And I'm going, okay, God, what are you trying to tell me? And it was like in our Bible studies, you know, we're preparing to minister to folks. And I always thought that we were going to go to Africa to bless these folks over there. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And that's how it happened. And hey, we went to Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy. That was something else, man.
What do you mean?
It was a blessing to me personally and to my family personally, more so than I think we blessed the folks there. Uh-huh. I'm still in touch with the pastor that we stayed with. Uh-huh. And his two daughters. They email me or FaceTime me all the time.
Yeah.
Of course, they're all, the girls are grown and one of them is married, but the other one's not. But it was a blessing that we watched God work. And for me, being in the church all my life, and you know, you hear, well, you know of God, but you don't know him. Well, yeah. That was who I was.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew of God, but didn't know him.
Wow.
And you know, I've had aunts and uncles that had gone to Africa as missionaries and come back and talked about the things that they saw God do. Uh-huh. That's one thing to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a totally different thing when you actually see it for yourself.
Wow.
And it, ooh, mercy.
Yeah.
That's transforming.
Wow. What part of Africa was that?
We were in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe, South Africa.
South Africa, yep.
Yeah.
South Africa.
Okay.
That's an experience.
Now, I'm just eager to know what your definition of experience was in terms of what opened your eyes about God.
Well, we went out to a little place in the bush. And when I say bush, it's not like the bushes you see around here. It's dense.
Yeah.
It's called the Wetzel. And it's boulders and everything. The road, you have one strip of asphalt that you drive on, and when you see another car coming, you put one tire on the side of the road and one tire on the asphalt.
Wow.
And you pass the car. It's like that. We get there, and I experienced God restoring sight to a lady who was blind.
My God.
I witnessed God restore limbs to a lady who had a stroke 3 or 4 years earlier. Her right arm was deformed, withered, skin and bone. Her left leg was the same, and I watched it. I watched it straighten out.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I was holding the good lady's elbow, and I felt muscle grow.
Man.
And her leg straightened out, because she said, "You going to pray for me, and I'm gonna walk home." Because they brought her there in a wheelbarrow.
Mm.
And then we experienced God casting a demon out of a girl who had been possessed for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
She hadn't acknowledged her mother in 3 years. Mm. And when we left her, she had her head in her mother's lap. Her mother was just weeping. And she was saying, "Mommy, Mommy." That was it.
Mm.
And that's where, you know, God said, "You're supposed to be a pastor preaching for me."
Yeah.
I'm going, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Africa was for me a turning point.
Wow.
I know God for myself.
Yeah.
Am I perfect? No.
No.
Do I still struggle with stuff? Yes. I'm still in God's ICU.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know who he is.
Yeah. But let me ask you, what do you think made the difference in terms of being over in Africa? What was it being over there that is not prevalent over here where those kinds of things don't transpire?
I think there's literally more faith over there than there is here. We have so much here.
Yeah.
In the Wetzel where we were, there were huts. People were living in huts.
Mm.
And all around the huts, it was clean. There was no trash. There was no stuff like that. It was clean. They appreciated what they had.
Mm.
And when they found out that there was a group of people praying for folks, and we got in at early in the mornings when we got to Duetzel. I'm talking about 1 or 2, 1 o'clock in the morning, 12, 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady walked up to us when we were getting up at sun up. And she said, "I understand that you're praying for people here and they're getting healed." And I looked at my wife and went, "Excuse me."
Uh-huh.
Who told her that?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The first thing that thought came in my mind, this is all about God. The Holy Spirit spoke to her.
Yes.
She walked about 11 miles at night.
Wow.
In the bush. That's God.
Yes.
That's all God.
Yeah.
And so to me, Africa was a situation where God put us in a position where the only thing we could say, it's all God.
Wow, that's amazing.
And see, over here in the United States, we got so much.
We certainly do. Yeah.
And we got the doctors and this, that, and the other. Well, they don't have access to that.
Yeah.
But they have the faith that we don't have.
Yeah. Amazing, Billy. Lord, have mercy on me, Jesus. let me go to Africa and find the first plane out of here, man.
Hey, oh, man. You go to South Africa. If you fly in South Africa, when you get off the plane and walk in there, they're going to say, "Welcome home."
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah.
Now, it was good, man.
Were you down there with Lester Parkinson's dad, father-in-law?
Ask the question again.
Lester Parkinson's father-in-law was a millionaire there in South Africa, Zimbabwe.
Yes.
Yeah. Were you familiar with him?
No, I was not.
Okay.
I was not.
All right. I think he owned some kind of company, that busing company or something like that in Zimbabwe.
Mm.
Yeah. So when did you start pastoring there in Africa or when you got
no,
back?
No. I came home when we came back from watching God heal the girl that it was possessed. I got back to where we were camped, and the pastor walked up to me, and he said, your 40 years of wandering in the wilderness are over.
Wow.
And I looked at him. See, he didn't understand that I had made a promise to God almost 40 years prior to that. I was at Fort Sam Houston in basic training. And we were under orders to go to Vietnam. And I said, Lord, I don't need to go to Vietnam. Now, if you get me out of going to Vietnam, I'll preach for you.
Yeah.
And I ran from that for 40 years.
Wow.
And the pastor said, and he didn't know that. Yeah. He didn't know anything about that. When he said that, it was like, okay, another wake-up call.
Wow, wow.
And so he said, oh, by the way, you're going to preach the first Sabbath we're back. And the first thing out of my mouth was, oh, no, I'm not.
Wow.
And he just gave me that look, and I didn't say anything else. I just said, think to myself, all right, here we go.
Uh-huh.
Get back to States. And I've seen my father prepare sermons. I've seen my brother prepare sermons. So I sat down and started preparing a sermon and wrote it all out. My wife looked over it and everything. I get up there Sabbath morning, said my little prayer, opened my folder, and all the pages were blank.
Wow, wow.
And I had a conversation with God.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hold it. You know this is not where I feel comfortable in being. And he spoke to me, just open your mouth. Yeah. I'll do the rest.
Wow, wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. And my wife was sitting there looking at me going, where did that come from? Mm. And all I could tell her was, that was from up there.
Yeah.
That wasn't me.
Wow, wow. Now was it the same church in Florida that you left?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
No, Mount Dora Church. I left Mount Sinai and then moved to Mount Dora.
That's what I'm saying. Is it the same church?
That same church, Mount Dora.
Okay.
And the pastor, they took him out of pastoring and put him in the conference office. He was over lay pastors.
Okay.
And he called me, I guess it was maybe 4 or 5 weeks later, said, there's a church in Crystal River that needs a pastor.
Wow.
And my first response was, okay, so and? He says, well, you need to pray about it. I got on my knees and we prayed. And
Lord have mercy, Jesus.
Next thing I know, I'm headed to the Crystal River, and that's an hour and a half from where I live.
Wow.
One way.
Wow, wow, wow.
Yep, but that was a blessing. I would not have been able to do that earlier.
Wow, yeah, yeah.
I had to experience God for myself in order to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, 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 man, I tell you. Now, was that the only church you pastored?
That is the only one I pastored.
Okay. Well, I tell you, man, I usually don't interview people any longer than about an hour. No, I'm sorry, about 30 to 40 minutes. And
we've been at this for how long?
Must I say?
We have too much shared history.
I'm telling you, my brother. I'm telling you, man. This has been beautiful. I'm grateful, number one, and I just talked with you maybe 2 days ago.
Yeah.
After many years of our not even being in contact with each other, and here, look at what has transpired. All of the years that has transpired in your life, and we were able to go through it in 1 hour. Still the half has not been told, but a good enough amount has been told to be an inspiration to the people that's listening to us from all over the world. We have a global...
Well, I hope so. I pray God that someone is blessed.
Without a doubt, man. It can't help but be blessed. That was a mighty powerful testimony. Billy, and I'm so happy, and I'm just hoping that our reconnection will be for a purpose and not just this one-time situation, you know?
Now, that I would love to see happen.
Yeah. We've never had the privilege of having our paths crossed before, but they're crossing now. And
that's true. So let's keep them crossed.
You better believe it, my friend. And that has happened with Doug and I, man. Doug and I have been in contact ever since I interviewed him a few months ago, and We call and talk quite often. In fact, we do a Monday morning prayer time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've just been blessing. So I love you so much, man.
I love you too, man. I pray a blessing on what you're doing or what God has led you to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And that he gives you the strength and the wisdom to continue.
Well, I will. People like you, how can I fail, man? I tell you.
I will do that, man. All appreciate right. you.
Yeah, you take good care now.
All right now.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Sure.
Thanks for tuning in to the broadcast today and for being a part of a growing audience looking for higher dimensions and a deeper understanding of the world in which you live. Gather the family and tell a friend to tune in to the next episode. The best is yet to come.